date is April 5th, 2008.
And this is Len Borden. I've been a resident of Easton all my life, and most of it as a farmer. I got my basic education about life. Most people get it from bees and birds. I got it from geese and goats. My goats make a very excellent pet. And the only thing I have to say is, if you're going to have one just for a pet, if it's a male, it should be altered, because they have a strange odor about them.
Strong odor.
Yeah. And they also can be quite feisty. But my goat was very clever. We had a barn with a partition down through it, inch board wide. It's 4 foot high probably. And he could jump up out there and balance 4 feet and turn around very quick. And we had quite a game. I'd go in the barn and he'd jump up on that thing. And if I went in the door, he'd turn around and go that way. If I went back, he'd turn around again. And if I did it several times, he was really up to beat the daylights out of me. And he would.
How old were you about when he was playing tricks on you?
Oh, probably 10. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
did he have a name?
Yeah, Dopey. But he handsome offspring, and watching them in the pen one day, one of them standing in the middle of the pen and jump up against the wall, all 4 feet on the wall, right back down. And the ice would be closed and chewing the cud, and to do that and come back, and I couldn't believe what I saw. And he did it again, or she did it again, and then I was convinced I really had seen it. And after a few days, those goats got so they could run around about three sides of the barn and stay on the wall.
Yeah.
And they're very clever animals and make an excellent pet. I know some people have had, and my cousin had a pet goat, and it just wandered around the dooryard and behaved itself and so forth and so on. My goat wouldn't behave himself. Well, somebody picked apples for my father one year, and they had geese. And for some reason or other, I ended up with a goose. I hadn't planned on it, but same way with the goat. And I was told it was a gander, and so I named it Henry. And after been there a while, I started finding goose eggs. So the name changed to Henrietta. And Henrietta started laying eggs, and then she decided to set on them, but they never hatched. And so I got the advice I had to have another goose to match up. And where it came from, I don't know, but we get the second goose. And the next season, Henrietta started laying eggs, and she didn't quit and start setting on them. So I got the smart idea of, we had some hens that were in a broody mood, and I set 5 eggs under one hen. And goose kept laying, and so I had, I think, 3 hens with eggs under them. And the first one hatched out, and the chicken accepted the goslings, even though they were bigger than any chicks would be, and raised them. And when they got big enough, they got the urge to go down towards the pond, whether they could sense the water there or what. But they went down to the pond, the chicken went along, and I went down to see what was going on. And they got down to the water, they ran right out into the water, and that chicken went crazy, clucking and trying to call them back. But the geese went right on. And the chicken accepted it and raised them. Well, I ended up with more geese than I knew what to do with, and worked out a deal. At Christmas time, there's a certain faction in Mechanicville area at that time that wanted geese for a goose for their Christmas dinner. So I made a deal, and we sold I don't know how many geese, and we dressed off chickens many times, and my father had rigged up a tub to scald them in to make the feathers come off. Well, when we did it with the geese, there was a lot of pin feathers left, and before we got done with that, about 15 or 12 or 15 geese, we were all sick and tired of picking pin feathers, and I understood that my family members wouldn't go through that again, so next time we sold them live. and got around it that way. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was in high school, the tractors had been coming around fairly, but on the farms. It would have been faster if it hadn't been for the Depression. But there's still quite a few farms, and the ag teacher decided that he had to teach something about tractors being used for belt power. And it's quite a job to set up a machine and belt a tractor to it and have the belt stay on and so forth and keep it tight. And the question come up, is a short belt took more power than a long belt because there's more slippage. The longer belt had more weight to put pressure on the pulleys. And one kid in the class, which is in the two years of classes put together in one, and he was older than I, and he claimed that the longer the belt, the less power it took. And I said, no, you can't say that. Oh, yes, he was sure of it, and the teacher went along with him. Well, this argument took the whole class, the whole hour, and the next class we had, right back into the argument again, and this went on for several weeks, and the ag teacher was getting unhappy. He could not keep up with his schedule. And he blamed me for keeping the argument going, I guess. So finally, one day, the argument came up, and I said, okay, we'll take the tractor and put it up on Willard Mountain, put the blower over in Saratoga County, and the good long belt, and if it takes less power and a longer belt, maybe we won't even have to start the motor. And then I convinced the ag teacher that you couldn't say it that way. Mm-hmm. Well, that fellow went in the Army. I went to Cornell, and 15 years later, we were working together. I'm building onto our original milk and power. And he was experienced in carpenter work, and he would work, and when I got chores done, I'd go in and help him. I get in this one day, and he's all ready to put a timber up. And he says, I'll put the timber up, and you do a lesson saw to hold it. And he couldn't get the timber up in the air. So I said, I'd try it. He says, you think you can? I said, no, 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 you try. I got the timber up there, and he blacked it up, and we got all set. Then he started to chuckle, and he said, I think that a number of years ago I was going to knock the daylights out of you. And he hadn't been taking care of himself, and he'd been nervous and so forth, and lost a lot of weight. So that's the way that left. And the horses were becoming extinct on the farm before I went to college, but when I came back home, there was no horses there. And, of course, I had to show I could harness or unharness a horse to pass in exams and getting into Cornell. We had a pair of horses that were not easy to drive. And the male horse would balk a good many times and wouldn't go. And one time my uncle, full-blooded Irishman, they think they're good horsemen, said, I know just what to do with that horse. And he laced him over the head with one of the lines. And that horse reared up on his hind feet, pawed his feet at my uncle. And when he came down, he was across the pole and the neck yoke. And every time anybody went near him, he got excited again. And it seemed like forever. I was only a kid, 5 years old maybe. I was on the wagon, and they finally got him going again. And I never cared about horses much. The neighbors down the road, I understand, and a team that would balk. And they thunderstorm coming up, and they went in the yard with a load of hay, and the horse stopped and wouldn't move. And they wanted to get going, but they had more hay to get. Somebody got the idea of taking a wad of hay and putting under the horse and lighting it. And it worked. The horse went ahead just so the load of hay was over the fire. Then they had to work like the devil to get the fire out. But horses can be, a good horse is very good. Clarence Buckley told me when he was a boy, he lived with his grandparents in Valley Falls. And he would hire out to the undertaker to pull the hearse with the horses. And one day he went to Stillwater and back, then to Scarlaville and back. And on the way back, he was getting kind of tired, and it was cold, so he tied up the lines and crawled in the back of the hearse, rolled up in the blanket, and when he woke up, he was in Valley Falls in his dooryard.
Really?
Yeah, and it's not too hard to believe, because when Fryhofer's and the milk companies in Troy had horse deliveries, those horses would make the route, stop for red lights, stop for every house they were supposed to, mm-hmm. and the driver never had to do a thing. And when they come around to go change the trucks, I thought the drivers would be happy because they could move faster. But a lot of them were very unhappy, because on the way back to the plant, they could do their book work and the horse would stop the red lights, make the turns and everything. Mm-hmm. So there was a great thing about horses. So when some of the guys started driving tractors, they run into trouble. One guy was just starting to plow a field, I believe, and there was a hawk riding the air currents, and he kept gawking at them, ran into a tree. And now, if that had been horses, wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. Another guy was plowing, and in those days, those early plows had a wooden dowel pin you put in the hitch that would shear when you hit an obstacle and unhook, and that would be it. When you had a rope, you had to pull to trip the plows in, and you pull it again to pull them out. And he tied that to the tractor, and every time the pin shore, it broke the rope a little. And finally, the rope got too short, so he tied it to his bib overalls, and the seat was the furthest back on the tractor in those days. And the next time the plows unhooked, it pulled them off the seat, and the tractor ran away. Saying woe wouldn't do any good. We had a neighbor that bought a John Deere tractor, and that was a right-hand clutch. Mm-hmm. And the wheel brakes with either foot, so it was different. Now, he'd driven a Model A car for several years. He was a good driver with that, but he couldn't ever remember when he was driving the tractor. First thing you'd hear him saying, whoa, and then he'd put his foot on the left-hand wheel brake, and the tractor, the John Deere, would go pop, 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 and then after a while you hear it stop. The first time he went to put it in the garage, he hit the wheel brake and started through the side of the garage, and he got it stopped, and he never put it back in. After that, his boys always parked the tractor. So some people in trouble with tech. Now, at times, before my time, they used to put grain in the barn and thresh it in the wintertime. And it was quite a practice, I guess. And of course, it's a dusty job anyway. And in the wintertime, drinking water would freeze, so they had other drinks that wouldn't freeze at that temperature. And this one place they were thrashing, and they'd been pretty thirsty, and they drank just a little too much, and they decided they'd walk home, and the cross lots, it would be shorter. And on the way home, crossing the brook, hence ice on the side, and he slipped and fell in. He decided that he was so dusty and dirty, it was a good time to wash his clothes and take a bath, which he did. And damn near died of pneumonia over it. I don't think he was 100%, because he went to Montgomery Ward's after that sometime, and they had electric razors just come out. They had him on a bargain counter, and he bought one. He had no electricity in his house, but he had a power pole out front. Somebody come along one day, he had his face all lathered up with shaving cream, and the razor in one hand, and trying to figure out how to climb that pole and plug it in. If he'd ever been able to climb it, he wouldn't have to worry about shaving after that. My grandmother, I never knew her. She died soon after I was born. But she evidently had the habit of raking the hay fields with dump rake. And my father bought a side delivery rake, and she figured she was going to rake the hay. And he started to tell her what she had to do with a side delivery rake that's different from a dump rake. And she let him know that she'd been raking hay long before he was born, and she didn't need him to tell her how to rake hay. So she started off with a rake and went around the field once. And of course, it's an entirely different operation. Instead of going across the swaths, you went with it, and it made a continuous windrow. With the dump rakes, you made pieces of windrows. And she got around the field, and she stopped and said to my father, "How do you leave what you don't want to take?" And he got to laughing, so she went to the house and never raked hay again. My father's second tractor was on steel lugs, and he broke the hub on the wheel somehow and had to replace it. And at that time, the Goodyear Tire Company was just coming out with the idea of rubber tires on tractors. And they offered my father a deal where they furnished the rims if he'd buy the tires and make a rubber both ends of the tractor. And those new tires, the cleats were only a little quarter of an inch high, it seemed like. Nowadays, you'd say they're completely worn out, but that was the original tread on the tires. But my father made out well with it. We got laughed at so much about my father's rubber-tired tractor. It was ridiculous. And it's funny because it wasn't too many years after that before you wouldn't catch some of these fellas that were laughing driving a lug tractor, because if you let the wheel spin around more than once, it dug a hole so deep that the belly of the tractor would be dragging and you were stuck. And you had to go get the horses to pull it out, you know. So it really changed tractors, because you'd leave the tractor in the field and walk home to dinner rather than drive a lug tractor. But when you got the rubber tires, you could drive it home and back. Yeah, what a difference. My father got the idea. We had a very wet fall, and they were filling silage. We filled with two neighbors. And they were having trouble getting stuck with the wagons, wooden wheels with the iron tires, narrow. And he found a deal in Montgomery Wards where you could buy a wheel that would go on in place of the wooden wheels on the same axle and put car tires on it. So he did it on this one wagon, and the hired man was very upset over it. It was going to kill the horses. Some wide tires would pull hard, and he had more things against it, and he was pretty grumpy. But soon found out that he was the only one that could come out with a full load of corn. The rest of them had to go about a half a load to get out. But it wasn't because of the rubber tires. It was because he was a better horseman. Mm-hmm. And
he could get
on. He never wanted to admit that those rubber tires were any help at all. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I don't know, not very old, an old fellow used to come around to chop wood. And he'd chop for 6 days for so many dollars, room and board. On Sunday, he'd chop a half a day, but he didn't charge for that. He kept the axe from rusting. And Sunday afternoon, he'd do his laundry with a 5-gallon pail and a stick of wood to ash the clothes up and down. Better than any newfangled washing machine. Mm-hmm. But he was deafer than a doornail. And come find out that he'd had some kind of a disease when he was a kid, and it lost it completely. Mm-hmm. And one day, he was very punctual on the clock, and he come down for dinner, and my mother had been away and late getting back and didn't have it ready. And finally she got it ready. She sent me out to get him. He was walking around the block of wood, the chopping block, and the more he walked, the faster he went. He bent over, and his eyes just looking down. He's laid out just like a speed skater. And I couldn't get his attention. I hollered as loud as I could, and I tried to get in front of him, but he was looking down. And so I reached out and touched him on the arm, and I'm glad he didn't have an axe in his hand. He swung around. Well, I was pretty upset. I hated to scare the old fella, but he went in and gobbled down his meal and got it back out, chopping wood on time anyway. And he came back several times. You never knew when he was coming. It wasn't regular. He lived in Johnstown, we found out. His brother was a doctor, but he chopped wood year-round, and he must have covered quite a territory. And the last time he came into Scaticook Hotel, and they called up to see if we wanted the wood chopper, and my father sent me down to bring him home. I'd just gotten my license, and that was a good deal to get a chance to drive. But he came out of there with a box of chocolate, and he was eating it, and he offered me some. Well, I hated to take chocolate from him, and I could see how much he liked it. But I found out later that if you ate chocolate with him, you could get to know the fella and he'd relax and so forth. And I wished I'd had. It was interesting. But that's the last time I saw him. But sometime in between, he came around and was chopping wood during the spring when my father had parsnips and they coming out of the garden. Mm-hmm. And my mother cooked up a bowl of parsnips, creamed like you would cream potatoes. And the first dish she put down on the table was the parsnips. And he took about half of it because he liked potatoes. Mm-hmm. And he tasted them, and all of a sudden he left the house, went down the road and told the neighbors we were poisoning them.
He never had a parsnip.
Evidently not, or he didn't know what they were. No. But he's kept his axe and stuff in the corn house, and my father kept the spray materials in there, and there was some lead arsenic bags in there, and evidently he saw them and put the two and two together. Mm-hmm. But he did come back after that, after a number of years, but I didn't think we'd ever see him again.
Well, I was wondering if he had a speech, even though he was deaf,
a speech. Yeah, but like most deaf people, it was hard to understand sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that time I was bringing him back from the hotel in Scaticook, we go by a place, and he says, "Is that so-and-so's place?" And it would be two owners back from the present owner. So he'd been evidently coming around for a number of years. But he had a good memory and sharp in every way. And he, when he swung an axe, the chips flew. Boy, he could chop wood. And he had a very slow but steady pace and keep it up.
And would you guys count on him? Like, would you plan, like, he's going to be the person that would chop your wood? Would you be counting on him?
You couldn't. But what usually did, you had him chop enough pile to, you had some leeway if you didn't come back right away. Mm-hmm. And then it come to the chainsaws. We sawed the wood in the lengths that you could handle, and he split it. And he split fence posts for us. And I think it was about 10 years after the last time he was there, we still found fence posts split up in the woods that he'd chopped. Yeah. Interesting. But I felt so sorry. What a lonely life he had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not being able to converse very well is something. Well, thinking about things going on in town, there was a fellow that had a car, one of the first cars in town, I guess. And, of course, it was all dirt roads, and even 40 was dirt.
Was town for you Scaticook? Like, when you say town, what town?
This town, Easton.
Oh, Easton.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our address is Scaticook, but no, we're Easton.
Okay. I was thinking, like, you go to town.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. But then...
But somebody in Easton had the first car.
Yeah, I don't know who it was now, but the brakes squeaked. Mm-hmm. And somebody told him to take them off and grease them. Take the wheels off and grease them. I don't know whether it was done as a joke or whether it was just poor advice, but anyway, the guy did it, and his first trip was up Fly Summit Road. And he's evidently one of these drivers that would kick the car out of gear going downhill to save gas, 15 cents a gallon, they had to, He came down and went across 40 and almost, I don't know whether he got the weight road or not, but he had quite a ride. And it's just lucky nobody was coming down. If he'd done that today, it could have been something. But they had quite a time. And another accident happened just out of the town of Easton. An old fella in the Model T. I'd seen the guy driving the Model T. It was one of these big, high touring cars. He was going down and hit a slippery spot, skidded around and went in a driveway. And went between the house and the outhouse. And the clothesline ran between the two buildings. The top of the car caught that clothesline and pulled the outhouse down on the door with a woman inside. And this old guy was a pretty old proper fella, and he's pretty upset. And the baby was crying in the house for the mother. He couldn't pick it up, of course, alone with her laying in there. And he had to wait for somebody come along to help him out. But what an experience that was for someone.
That's a lot of trauma.
And it's just lucky that he didn't hit the outhouse director. It could have been real damage, but she got banged up and bruised a little bit. Yeah, this is quite a strange thing. Now, the Easton Telephone Company, my grandfather had something to do with forming that company and so forth. I don't know how much. And my father worked for and as a lineman, and he was 12 or 13 years old. Mm-hmm. He got knocked off the pole once when they rang on the line, and he got the shock and fell. And he used the spikes to climb the pole. And I still got the spikes around and so forth. They hired somebody to come in. I don't know whether they covered the whole town of Easton or not, but they had quite a bit. And the central office was where Gracie Snell lives now. Yeah. And they hired this fellow to come in to take over because the business was expanding. And he wasn't there too long before he ended up near the deal with New York Telephone to buy the company out. And then he got a full-time job at the telephone company. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of the telephone company. But some of their tools are still on around our farm for digging holes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how far they went with wires, but my father told about being down near Stillwater working on wires. So they must have hooked into them.
They must have gone pretty far.
Yeah, in that direction. I don't know about Greenwich. Of course, when they put the telephone, New York Telephone took over, Greenwich line ended before our farm, and we were in the Valley Falls end of it. Mm-hmm. And we were in the old ringer 14-party line, I guess, and so forth. And one day I went to call up my sister, who was living down in Valley Falls, and the operator asked if it was me. And I, ooh, what's this? I didn't know an operator. And it happened to be a girl just a little older than I that I was acquainted with, had taken a job. She was working part-time as an operator in the evenings after school. And she could study, do her homework and in between calls and get paid too. And it was kind of interesting to talk with her because she's telling, it was fairly simple to understand how to run the switchboard. And that was a very simple machine in those days. But one thing she had to learn, a woman called up and said she wanted to talk with Mabel. She had to recognize that woman's voice and then know which Mabel of the three she wanted to talk with. And they were asked for all kinds of advice. And of course, in an emergency, they rang a steady ring and notified everybody on the line that there was
something.
A fire or something or other. Mm-hmm. So, and the nighttime operator was the lady in the home, her home, where the switchboard was. And she went to bed, and if the phone rang, she got up like anybody else would and go to it and do the calling. So it was quite interesting. And
isn't that something? That's amazing.
There's been a lot of changes in the time. Mm-hmm. When they first came out with the dial phone, George Sisson was joking about it. He says you had to have your finger on the directory so you could see the number, the finger in the dial. Mm-hmm. You had to put your foot up on the table to hold the phone while you twisted the dial. But, you had to know the number. And with the operator, a lot of times people just
ask for the person.
Yeah. So progress isn't always as great as it might be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, for a good many years, Albert Pratt picked apples for us. He enjoyed handling the fruit and so forth. And he's just as much the home on a ladder as anybody could be. And we had this one basswood ladder that was very light, 18 foot long and easy to handle. And he latched onto that. And every once in a while, somebody get there first and get to it. So he put a piece of tape around it and make it look like it was patched. Nobody would touch it after that. But one day, we had a school tour there. And he was picking. He picked everything he could reach. And, of course, after you pick the branches, they start to go up a little, and you never know what's going to happen. And he looked around to see where he'd go next. And the ladder did a shift, and he was over there, and he kept right on picking. And the teacher said, "Now, there's a professional apple picker. He can move the ladder without getting off it." And I never dared tell her the difference in front of the kids. I was afraid to embarrass her. But after the tour left, I told Albert what happened. He got laughing so hard, I thought he'd fall off the ladder.
We're going to run out of tape. I guess we're good, but just know, I don't want to end in the middle. Maybe what we'll do is say that we'll stop it here, and I'll fast forward it, and we'll turn it over. Okay, then we don't have to.
Okay.
So.